Well, let's turn back to Genesis chapter 2 and those opening three verses. Should have said at the beginning that we have tea and coffee afterwards. Everyone's welcome to stay. They're served in the back room and have opportunity to have fellowship together afterwards. So Genesis chapter 2, verses 1 to 3. Let me just read those verses again. Thus the heavens and the earth and all the host of them were finished. And on the seventh day, God ended his work which he had done. And he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. Then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he rested from all his work which God had created and made. So on Sunday mornings, we're coming back to the beginning. Genesis means beginning. As a society, we're in a mess. We're confused about so many things, basic things. Who we are, where we've come from, what it means to be human, how am I supposed to live, what is the purpose of my life. And we've come back to the start, back to the beginning, to remind ourselves and reassure ourselves as Christians about the answers to those questions. As Christians, we don't have to pretend we've got all the answers. We don't know everything. We don't understand everything. But the Bible does help us understand the answers to those most basic questions, those big questions. It does give us foundations. It does help us to answer those questions of who we are and why we're here and how we're supposed to live and what's the purpose of our lives. It gives us the answers to the mess that we're in. So we've come back to the beginning, and we started at the beginning with those incredible words, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. So the Bible declares we're not here by chance, we're not here by accident, there's a creator, this is his creation, we are his creatures. And this amazing universe has been made to display his glory and for us to live in it to his glory. And for his glory. God has made us in his image, we've seen, with worth and with dignity and with purpose. And last week we considered what that glorious purpose is. We considered the closing verses of chapter 1, that mandate that he gave to Adam and Eve at the beginning to be fruitful and multiply, to fill the earth and to subdue it. That was their task, if you like, at the beginning, to make the whole earth an Eden. To fill the whole earth with image bearers. To make the place, the whole earth, a place where the knowledge of the glory of the Lord covers the earth as the waters cover the sea. That was their mandate. Now, we've failed in that, haven't we? We've fallen short. We haven't lived for that. And yet, when we become Christians, when we come to know Jesus Christ and are made new creations, then we sort of begin again to fulfill that purpose of filling the earth with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. That's our purpose. And we do that whilst waiting for Jesus to come again, when he'll make an Eden restored, when he'll put everything right. There'll be a new heavens and a new earth, no death, no sin, a place of perfect rest, a place of perfect rest. Well, so far we've looked at the first 6 days of creation. Verse 31 of chapter 1, so the evening and the morning were the sixth day. And verse 1 of chapter 2, thus the heavens and the earth and all the hosts of them were finished. So this great creating work that God has been doing, it's done. It's over. It's complete. 6 days, and it's done. And surely the question we're left with as we come to the beginning of chapter 2 then is, why did God take 6 days? I mean, it's extraordinary in one sense, isn't it, that this vast universe was made in 6 days. Well, when you think about how long it takes us to do things. But in another sense, we think, why did God take 6 days? I mean, this is the eternal, infinite, almighty God. Why didn't he just make it instantaneously? Or why not 6 seconds? Or why not 6 minutes? Or 6 hours? Or 6 months, for that matter? The answer to that becomes clear in what follows. God did it in 6 days, at least in part because he was setting a pattern for the whole of creation and for mankind in particular. He has worked for 6 days, and now he's not just going to begin another week and carry on. He's going to make a seventh day, and on that seventh day he's going to rest, and he's going to set a pattern for life and for mankind. He's setting a pattern for the week. 6 days of work, 1 day of rest. The Hebrew word for week is the word meaning, it means divide into seven. Divide into seven. And that period of a week was recognized right from the beginning. So if you go to, you children know the story of Noah and the ark, when Noah sends out the dove, he waits, it comes back, he waits 7 days, he waits a week, sends it out again, comes back, sends it out again, a week later. So these verses before us this morning then concentrate on that seventh day. That's what we're thinking about this morning, the seventh day. The day actually is emphasized and highlighted far more than any other day. Do you notice that? So every other day, it's just mentioned at the end of the evening and the morning with the first day, the evening and the morning with the second day. But you notice in our verses, in verses 2 and 3, the seventh day is mentioned 3 times. Other days are just mentioned at the end. Seventh day mentioned 3 times. Actually, in the Hebrew, the seventh day is mentioned 3 times in 3 verses of 3 sentences of 7 Hebrew words. Now, that's not magic code, but it is a way in which Hebrew is used to emphasize things. This is a day we need to focus on. This is a day that's supposed to take our attention. And we're being told, as we live in this world, of the importance of this day, the importance of rest. That we can't do without rest, without stopping to rest in God, stopping to rest for God, and to know God, and to meet with God. So that's a longer introduction this morning. Now we get to our 2 points, and we're going to look at this under 2 headings. You'll see them on the sheet. What God did on the seventh day, and then what God did to the seventh day. So let's think about what God did on the seventh day. Verse 2, and on the seventh day he ended his work which he'd done, and he rested on the seventh day. That's what he did. Now, why did he do that? Did he need a day off? Is he worn out? Of course he isn't. This is the infinite eternal God. He's just spoken the world into being. He's spoken the stars into being. Isaiah 40 says that the Creator God neither faints nor is weary. God is not worn out. So what sort of rest is this? Well, it's resting from the work of creation, isn't it? It's done. It's finished. He's done it. It's complete. And he stops. The word for rest here is literally the word for ceased. So it's the rest of accomplishment. It's the rest of achievement and satisfaction. It's as if now he can sit back and enjoy what he's made and interact with the people that he's made. It's perhaps a similar picture to Jesus. You remember in Hebrews 1 verse 3, where having accomplished salvation, he then sits down at the right hand of the majesty on high. It's not that he sort of slumps in a chair exhausted. No, no, no. He's accomplished what he's done. It's finished. It's over. And he sits down. And it's similar here. God has done everything. He's finished everything. And now he rests and he sits back. Now, it's not that God is inactive. Of course not. It's not he's sort of sat there in a deck chair enjoying himself. That can't be, because God upholds all that he's made, doesn't he? The Bible says, in him we live and move and have our being. So God is always active in that sense. But he's finished making creation and he rests. And in doing so, he is setting a pattern for us. A principle of a day of rest. Having worked for 6 days, then comes the day of rest. So the word rested, the Hebrew word is sabbat. And it's the root word from which we get the word sabbath. Sabbath means a day of rest. So in the New Testament, we read, didn't we, in Mark 2, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. Now that's interesting, isn't it? Because although we're told God rested on the seventh day, we're being told here that he actually made it for us. So having created us, created man on the sixth day, then God made the Sabbath for man, for his good. And it's man in general, isn't it there? Now, clearly, God does make the Sabbath something special for the people of Israel and part of their covenant relationship. But those words from Jesus in Mark 2 make clear it's not just a thing for the old covenant. This is something bigger than that. This is something before that. This is made for mankind as a whole. So we call it a creation ordinance. So that in Genesis 1 and 2, you get sort of principles. That's really what it means, isn't it? So you get the principle of work, and you get the principle of marriage, and you get the principle of a day of rest. And, of course, we then find it enshrined in the Ten Commandments, don't we? So let's just turn there, make sure you're awake. I'm a bit warm. Can we have a couple of windows? Paul, could you open that window up there, perhaps? One behind you? Is it just me? Perhaps. Well, there's no good asking that question. That's the question never to ask, isn't it? Because some of you be freezing cold and some of you be warm, but I'm quite warm. So let's just turn to Exodus chapter 20. Exodus chapter 20, verse 8 to 11. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work, you nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gate. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. So the Ten Commandments, now they're given, aren't they, in the context of Israel, but they clearly stand apart from that as the moral law, as God's clear commandments for all humanity. And they're in the midst of commands about idolatry and murder and lying and adultery. Here's this command to keep this day special, to keep the Sabbath day. Now, I don't believe that the principle of a day of rest has ended with the coming of Jesus and the new covenant. I think it's changed, but it's an ongoing principle that stems from the pattern that God set at the beginning in creation. And of course, in the earliest days of the New Testament, that day changed from the last day to the first day of the week, the day that Jesus rose again from the dead, the resurrection day. That's the day that changed everything, isn't it? That's the day of the new creation, if you like. That's the day when the new creation began, when Jesus rose from the dead and everything changed. And he's in a sense already begun to bring in a new creation. And we as his people are new creatures in the Lord Jesus Christ. And this day is different. This day is set apart. So it was the first day of the week that Jesus rose from the dead. It was the first day of the week that then Jesus showed himself to his disciples. And didn't you remember, we were in the end of John's Gospel, weren't we, not that long ago. Thomas, you children remember this, Thomas wasn't there, was he, on that first Sunday, that first resurrection day. And what does Jesus do? Does he come back the next day? No, he doesn't, does he? Does he come back on Wednesday to show himself to Thomas? No, he waits a week, doesn't he? He comes back the next first day of the week. It's as if Jesus is setting a principle there. This is my day. This is when you'll know me particularly and meet with me particularly. And then there are various references, aren't there, to the church meeting on the first day of the week. Just turn to one of them with me, will you? Acts chapter 20. Acts chapter 20 and verse 7. Now, on the first day of the week, when the disciples came together to break bread, Paul, ready to depart the next day, spoke to them and continued his message until midnight. I like reading that because it's a reminder to you that my sermons are not long compared to the Apostle Paul. It was that occasion, wasn't it? Eutychus, the first person to fall asleep in a sermon. Certainly not the last to do that. So they've met on the first day of the week. To break bread together and to meet together and to worship God together. We know from 1 Corinthians 16, Paul speaks about putting something aside on the first day of the week. And then in Revelation 1, verse 10, you have that reference, don't you, to the Lord's Day. John being in the Spirit on the Lord's Day. Not the old Sabbath, but the Lord's Day. The Greek word is an adjective, meaning the day that belongs to the Lord. The only other time that particular sort of phrase is used is in 1 Corinthians about the Lord's Supper. This supper that the Lord has instituted. And there's this day that the Lord has instituted. And he said, this day is mine. So, we still believe in a principle of a day of rest. The Lord's Day, Sunday. This day distinct, set apart, this resurrection day. Now, we read from Mark 2. And in that argument with the Pharisees, we're reminded of the danger of a legalistic approach to the Sabbath rest. You know, the Pharisees had all those, they had 39 different categories of work and subsections and sub-clauses about what you couldn't do, how much you could carry and how far you could walk, and that you couldn't drag a chair across the room because that would be plowing, and all sorts of silly things like that they'd made up. And so we have to be careful, don't we, about just they'd made it a burden rather than a joy. They'd had their rules that prevented people actually from helping one another and meeting their own needs. Well, Jesus, as the Lord of the Sabbath, without demeaning the Sabbath, showed the emptiness and the folly of that. The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath, the Lord says. It's made for his good. It's not supposed to be a burden. So we have to be careful about making a whole list of rules and regulations about what we do and what we don't do, and looking down our noses at people who don't do it as we do. We must be very careful about that. Of course, there is work that has to be done on a Sunday. We're thankful for those who do work on a Sunday. But here's a principle. Here's what the Lord did on the seventh day. He rested. And clearly he is setting a pattern for us. And there's something humbling about it, okay? That we can't just keep going as human beings. We like to think that sometimes, some of us more than others. We can just keep on going, we can just keep on working. But you can't. You need a day of rest. You need to stop. Now, the idea of rest is a big theme in the Bible as well, isn't it? So I began the service. Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. There's that rest in the gospel, isn't there? That as we give up trying to save ourselves and give up trying to earn our salvation and just rest in the finished work of Jesus Christ and know the rest of sins forgiven and peace with God and having a heavenly Father who's looking after us and caring for us, and in the midst of everything we can just rest in him. What a wonderful blessing that is. And I wonder, do you know that rest this morning, that rest of just trusting in Jesus Christ? And then heaven is spoken of, isn't it, as a place of rest. That place where we finally can rest and sin's finished with once and for all. And we're finally in the land of rest. And in a sense, every Sunday is supposed to be a little foretaste of that. As we meet with God's people, as we stop, as we worship him, as we fellowship together. It's a little glimpse of the final rest that's to come. That's what God did on the seventh day. He rested and he set a pattern for us. Now let's think about what God did to the seventh day. And for this we move on to verse 3. God did two things, didn't he? To the seventh day. He blessed it and he sanctified it. And he did both of those things because he'd rested on that day. So we read that he blessed the seventh day. Then God blessed the seventh day. What does that mean? Well, we've already seen, haven't we, twice in chapter 1, God blessing things. So God blessed in verse 22, God blessed the birds of the air and the fish of the sea. And then he also, verse 28, blessed man. We thought about that, didn't we? His blessing speaks of his smile, his approval. And on both of those previous occasions, it's in the context of being fruitful and multiplying. So when God blesses this day, and he doesn't do that with any other day, he blesses this day in particular, he's making it a day of blessing, a day in which to be fruitful, a day which will be fruitful if it's used in the right way. He's made it a blessing so that keeping this day and resting in this day and using it as God intended it to do will be a blessing for you, body, soul, in every way. We've already mentioned Jesus said, Sabbath was made for man, for us as a whole, for our good, for our blessing. And if we despise this day, if we neglect this day, we're missing out on blessing. A blessing for our souls. If we treat it like any other day, we're missing out on blessing. If we neglect this day, let's just turn to Isaiah. Lovely verses in Isaiah chapter 58. You find that, or you can listen in. Isaiah chapter 58 and verse 13 and 14. If you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your own, to doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, a holy day of the Lord, honorable, and shall honor him, not doing your own ways, nor finding your own pleasure, nor speaking your own words, then you shall delight yourself in the Lord, and I will cause you to ride on the high hills of the earth and feed you with the heritage of Jacob, your father. The mouth of the Lord has spoken. So if God is saying to you, if you just stop from just doing your own thing and pleasing yourself and making it about you, and if you fix your eyes on me and make the Sabbath about me, then you will find delight in that and delight in me and find blessing for your souls. So I want to ask you then this morning, how do you approach Sunday, the Lord's Day? Do you look for it to be a day of blessing? Are you looking for the Lord to bless you on it, to meet with you on it, to rest your soul and mind and body in every way as you come to him and you give it to him? It's a fruitful day. And we're to give it to the Lord. So, and that's the second thing the Lord does. He blessed the day and he sanctified it. That means he declared it holy. He set it apart. It's the first thing in the Bible that God sanctifies. The seventh day. So what does that mean? Well, it means he set it apart. In other words, it's a distinct day. It's a different day. It's distinct in terms of what it's for. It's for rest and not work. Now, I've said we do have to be careful about making rules and about Sunday, what you can and can't do, but we do need to keep it distinct. And I don't think the problem for most Christians is they've got too many rules about of do's and don'ts about Sunday these days. I think the problem is we've forgotten it's a day set apart. That it's a different day. And we're not thinking about this day as we should do. And not looking for it to be the blessing that it can be. So sanctify means it's set apart from the rest, but it means it's set apart for the Lord. That's why anything's set apart in the Bible is set apart for him. For his honor, for his glory. So, and I think that's why it's significant that John speaks about the Lord's day. It's a day for the Lord. It's a day set apart from him. So it's not just to be seen as a day of rest so that we can go off to the beach and please ourselves, but it's set apart for the Lord so that we can rest in him and look to him and find our rest and our joy and our peace and our delights in the Lord, as we please him, as we worship him, as we meet with his people, as we feed our souls. Now, if we're his people, we'll be glad to do that. If our hearts have been changed by the gospel, then we'll love his day. And we'll love meeting with his people. And I've had the privilege of standing up here and seeing people who for whom coming here was just a duty turn into a delight. And that's what happens, isn't it, when we become God's people. Now, of course, church life and life in general can be a battle, and sometimes it can be hard to come along. But that's a good question for us. That's a good question for to discover how we're doing spiritually. What do we think about Sundays? Are we pleased to be here? Are we just reluctantly here? Are we just itching to get away to do what we really want to do? It's a day of rest. It's a day set apart from others, set apart from the Lord. So how are you going to make it different? How are you going to make it a day of rest? As I say, we're thankful for those who do work on Sundays when that has to happen. But what an opportunity Sunday is for us. What a blessing to be able to stop in that way. An opportunity to leave other things, leave the world, leave your study, leave your housework, leave your DIY, meet with God's people, spend time together, rest in the gospel, making it an oasis for your soul. We're going to go to France on holiday in August, God willing, and the destination will be a rest. A lovely rest, we hope, anyway. But you can't get there without stopping on the way. It's just too far to go down to the south of France. But thankfully, along the way in France, at regular intervals, there are lovely service stations. They're far nicer than the ones and far less expensive than the ones in the UK. And there are opportunities for rest. It's not the final destination, but there are rests along the way. There are opportunities to stop and rest and refuel and refresh in order that you make it safely to the final destination. And Sundays are a bit like that. We're heading for a final rest, brothers and sisters. And we need Sundays along the way to remind us, to refresh our souls, to encourage us in the things of God, to spend time together, to think about that rest, to have a little foretaste of it together. It's a precious day. It's a precious opportunity. Can I address parents? In a sense, we're all parents, in the church together as a family. But often our attitude towards Sunday rubs off on our children, doesn't it? They need to see that we love the day. They need to see that we delight in the day, that we honor the day, that we're stopping and resting, because we're setting an example, aren't we, for the next generation. We love meeting. It's our best of days. Do the children in the church, do they see that in us as adults? That this is our best of days. This is what we love. This is the Lord's day. We need to make it a good day for our children, don't we? We need to make it a different day. Our children are all grown up, but they still, when they come home, still expect a little pot of sweets on Sunday morning that they used to get when they were little. We need to protect our children, don't we? Very often it's Sunday which is a crunch issue for our children. What do they do on a Sunday? What do we let them do on a Sunday? It's not a simple question. They're not easy answers, but we just need prayerfully to look to the Lord to help us. And you young people, you children, I want to encourage you to love Sunday. To make the most of Sunday, to be careful about Sunday. I'm so thankful to my parents for making Sundays non-negotiable days. Now, they probably made a bit too many rules, and they probably say that themselves now. But it was non-negotiable Sunday. I wanted to play football for a local team. All my mates played for. I used to train with them on a Tuesday, and believe it or not, they wanted me to play for them on a Sunday. And I would have done. But Mum and Dad said no. And I'm eternally thankful to them for that. Because it would have been a spiritual disaster for me. It would have been the beginning of a slippery slope, I'm sure. So ask God to help you love Sunday. And as a church, let's ask the Lord to help us love Sundays. To love the Lord's Day. To make it a blessing day for us. To come hungry, to come expectant, to come for fellowship, to come to meet with God, to come for a little foretaste of that glory to come. God finished his work of creation and he rested. And Jesus, on the cross, said, "It is finished." He'd finished the work of redemption so that you and I today can rest in Jesus Christ and rest in his day and look forward to that eternal rest. Is that your hope this morning? If not, Jesus says, "Come to me. Come to me. Cry out to me. Acknowledge your need of rest. Acknowledge your need of forgiveness and find that rest in Jesus Christ today."